You're watching the Catholic Family Podcast, and I'm very happy to be joined today by Father Stephen McKenna and starting a series, as you say. It's something that I'm really super excited about, and it is a series about philosophy, and it's going to end up being kind of the errors of modern philosophy. But today, Father is going to be kind enough to give us kind of a brief brush up of, well, what is philosophy? You know, what does that actually mean? And Father is going to be, as Father said in the kind of the run up to this, the prep to it, is like, you know, you can really get into the weeds and you can really dig into every little nook and cranny of philosophy. But that's not the point, I think, of this show. Father wants to kind of do this in lay terms, explain it to me like I'm five, which I often, my brain acts like a five-year-old very often. So we're going to try to do this. Father's going to try to dumb it down a bit for me and for anyone else who needs it to be dumbed down, and hopefully, again, have a good time and learn a lot. So, Father, thank you so much for doing this with me and wherever you want to start.
Oh, thank you. And I guess maybe just a, you know, just a real quick, point to go along with that. That is actually something that I've always, philosophy has been something I've been interested in a long time. I have a degree in philosophy in addition to a bachelor's degree in philosophy in addition to having studied at seminary, obviously. And something that I've always noticed from the outset, because once I really began to learn about philosophy, was that I found that I ended up really liking it. And from the outset, I noticed, like, for most people, it was two extremes. And I thought in their reaction towards philosophy. And I always thought that was just unfair to what it is, because it's so important. Which is why I'm so glad we get to kind of do this a little bit. One extreme being, for the most part, a lot of people thinking that philosophy is this, you know, super, you know, intellectual thing that is ungraspable, and that they're incapable of being able to study or would never even want to endeavor to study. And that's unfair. I think a lot of times it's terminology and shaping your brain to start delving into making distinctions and certain points and focusing on particulars that takes a little bit of adjustment that scares people away. So yeah, I want to sort of, with this, dispel that, have something that for the average person, who most people don't today study philosophy, which is a bit of a shame, that it is something that can be not only graspable, but we can even make it enjoyable as we go along. And it's also, as we get into the modern eras of philosophy, it's something that's very relevant to today. And understanding the church, the crisis in the church, and understanding society and the crises we face in society as well. A lot of it stems from these philosophical modern ideas. Secondarily, the other side to that coin, though, is that I see too often times that there's this other faction that has some knowledge of philosophy, but they make it almost appear to be an unreachable thing for the other side. So often I see, well, philosophy is, you know, a difficult science, or it takes a long time to understand philosophy, or, you know, whatever. And I also think that's unfair. First off, it scares away the people that that are afraid to look at it. Secondarily, I think it's disingenuous because of the fact that it what it really shows is either an insecurity in your own knowledge of how to, you know, utilize philosophy, or at least subconscious understanding that perhaps the argument that you're trying to defend is flawed, because the idea just to make yourself, well, I'm just smarter than you, and therefore, and this is just too hard for you to understand and you can't grasp it. That's right. That's not fair. And I think that's what we're going to try to do with this too, is that I think understanding any subject, the real test of it, and this is why it's sort of like an exercise and a true test for me, is to be able to not explain it to the, you know, advanced classes of that subject. That's easy for somebody who has a grasp on something. It's to be able to break it down and make it digestible for the mass people. And that's when you shows a comfort. That shows an adaptability, and that's something that, like I said, hopefully will spur some interest in people to learn a little bit more, not be afraid to start delving into philosophy as a study, to understand how to operate logically, and to also understand and recognize where some of the problems in today's society and the church and everything like that come from. So
it makes sense, Father. And it's something that I've looked a little bit into classical education. And as far as I understand, classical education kind of based its formation on, first of all, theology, second of all, philosophy, and then they learned the arts. So you learned about God, and then you learned how to reason and how to think, and then you learned everything else. And that makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I think that you don't see that much anymore, right, in education. Now it's you learn how to learn, you learn how to study, you learn how to memorize. And I think people, as we see in society, people have actually forgotten how to actually think, you know, and I don't mean that just to be mean. I mean, like, how to actually reason and how to say, is this true or is it not? Even if someone in somewhere tells me that it's true.
Yeah. And I mean, for you, you went to a Catholic school, so you would have gotten this. And for me, I was public school educated, but I think I'm old enough to still have some aspect of it where we used to get problems in school for different classes and things that would be labeled as critical thinking problems. Mm-hmm. And that is an exercise in the understanding of the philosophical sciences and that ability to reason your way through a problem, to reason your way to understanding a solution. We'll find in today's thing about the connections to how, you know, it bases, you know, the idea of function in natural sciences and just the operation in daily life revolves around this. And so much today, things are based on feelings, or in education settings, things are based on indoctrination. You know, it's easy to dictate to somebody and to convince them to have a worldview if there's no contrary ability to use rationale to critique what has brought to people. That's why, you know, you can, you know, when you tell a small child something, they take it on trust that their parents would always just tell them the truth. And the same thing happens to people as they get older. If you see an authoritative figure, the natural instinct of a man is to just trust that an authoritative figure, a teacher, a professor, a scientist, doctor, a politician, that they are some sort of perceived authority. And so therefore, my inherent first reaction is to trust what they say, not to criticize or to think about it to compare the pieces to make sure it actually makes sense or not. I just almost take it on a bit of trust or faith in that sense. And so, but in as we've seen over, especially the last 2 years, we cannot do that and expect to survive. You know, that's, you know, our world is tumbling down a hill really fast, and it's largely because people do not exercise reason very often, or are incapable of doing so well. So I think that's, all of this is so pertinent to today's society. And like I said, nobody's saying you need to go out and get a bachelor's degree in philosophy or doctorate in philosophy or something like that, but to have it as a point of, like you said, it was always part of education, this rounded education of using, you know, being able to use logic, to be able to critically think. When you think of the perfect example for that is when you think of the origins of the Beretta of the priest, that it harkens back to really when you think of that the early universities were combined universities. And so that you had your secular university students studying with your clerical university students for those initial stages of study. And when they finished their beginning studies, which was generally speaking like a philosophy type of study, and they finished their philosophy, they would move on. And if they became clerics, then they began to wear the beretta, part of their clerical wear as a non-religious priest, as it were. And what has that become to us now is now broken down to us as the roller board for graduation, because mm-hmm. that's the origin of that. It comes from that anybody seeking higher education, they gained an education in philosophy because it really was an important aspect to branching off into all other areas of study in higher education. It facilitated all those things. And so sort of understanding it in that sense. And then, like I said, being able to start to be desirous to dive into those areas is important.
Well, and Father, then, I mean, I guess where do you want to start? I mean, I imagine you want to probably start describing what philosophy is, but I've not been given an outline from this. We did that on purpose so that I am like the viewers trying to, you know, maybe ask questions that everyone else might have and whatnot. So I'm not prepared. Father is prepared. So Father, wherever you want to start, I'm excited to get rolling.
I hope I'm prepared anyways. I'd like to start really at the very, very basic fundamental aspect of it. And that is, and a good place to start in these things is etymology. You know, what does the word philosophy actually mean? What is it to be defined as? And it comes from the Greek combination of two words, the philia, which is the Greek for love, and Sophia, which is the Greek for wisdom. And so it is essentially a love of wisdom as an etymological definition of it. It's believed that the very term philosophy, at least legend states, that it comes from the Greek thinker Pythagoras, actually, as the one in the 6th century BC, potentially maybe having coined the term. So it's recognized that in that man, having by being a philosopher, being a lover of wisdom, it's recognized that man is incapable of obtaining full wisdom, you know, to have like the full grasp of all things in the realm of wisdom, but rather that he is a lover of seeking after and obtaining and gaining in the study and knowledge this idea of wisdom, that somebody truly can't claim to be really wise, but rather to understand that they love to grow in wisdom. They love to seek after this wisdom, and that is their goal. Now, that I think merits a further breakdown. First off, what is love? And then secondary, what is wisdom? Love is, we have to understand it from a true sense of the word, not and a bit, you know, philosophical sense, but it also transcends into us as Catholics understanding love. We don't mean it in the sense of virtue, you know, love of God above all else and love of neighbor as self, but we mean it in at least a philosophical sense, apart from sentiments. We don't want it to be confused with sentimental ideas of love. So love, we have to understand, is truly an act of the will. It is a drive of the will towards an object. And so that meaning that I see something that I desire to either obtain or understand, and I work my way towards that thing. If you think about it in a relationship sense, you see a spouse or a potential spouse, and you work your way towards obtaining them as a husband or a wife. And then once you've obtained them as a husband and wife, you work your way towards having a greater union with them day by day throughout your lifetime. If you think about it in terms of the physical world around us, you know, it could be towards some sort of achievement, some sort of physical obtaining, but in this sense we're talking about the drive towards wisdom when we talk about philosophy. And so wisdom is not it, oftentimes we think of wisdom and we interchange it with understanding or knowledge, and that's a mistake. Knowledge is only a part of wisdom, but if we want to understand what wisdom truly is, wisdom is knowledge plus the ability and inclination of putting that knowledge to good use. So it's not enough to know something. It's enough, it's more so to be able to and want to put it into good use. Again, if we use an example here, think about, it's not enough to know God, to know God exists, to know who he is, to know how he operates and things like that. That's part of it, right? But does not the devil know God, right? He has a knowledge of God far superior to our own knowledge of God, but he has neither the inclination or the ability to put that into a good practice. We, on the other hand, if we want to be wise in our faith, we need to learn about the things of God in our faith, and then we need to put it into practice, to begin to be virtuous, to strive after avoiding sin, to strive after increasing in grace and merit and virtue. That's the good application, to strive to ultimately to work our way towards God. And so there's a distinction there, knowledge versus wisdom, and that's an important thing. And so so philosophy, in a sense, is a sum total of things in general worth knowing and are working towards it. Now, that's a very etymological definition. And I think it does a good job. I'll provide an additional, just quickly, definition from what the, like, a real definition could be from, this is from actually Monsignor Glenn, who wrote a series on philosophy, series on philosophy. He says that philosophy is the science of all things naturally knowable to man's unaided powers, insofar as these things are studied in their deepest causes and reasons. Again, philosophy is not to be confused with religion. Philosophy assists in religion, it aids in religion, and sometimes even overlaps with religion. But philosophy is only concerned about the natural aspect of knowledge and wisdom and its application, the things that we're to obtain through our own reason.
So when you're in the seminary, for example, Father, you would have studied philosophy and some sort of theology kind of simultaneously.
The way it was laid out, at least for me anyways, was that I know some places do that. And I think it's more because of the fact of not having an overabundance of faculty, because you have all these varying grades in there that mm-hmm. you would necessarily say, like, okay, well, this year one of the classes being offered is, the first of moral theology. So therefore, these maybe top 3 or 4 years, they're going to all study it together, regardless of what order it came into. And I think there's some aspect of separation. Like, I know that as a generality, I think most Holy Trinity tries to, I don't want to speak for them, but I think they try to do their best to keep, like, as a distinction, philosophy students and theology students.
Interesting. Okay.
As like a separation, and it was that way for me that philosophy came first. And yes, there was aspects of church, especially, but it was more like spiritual life stuff and scriptural stuff and things like that, rather than the science of theology, because really having that basis in philosophy, having the basis in natural wisdom and knowledge, and that facility to use to be able to formulate arguments and make distinctions and do that, it really services and supports the study of theology. Mm-hmm. If you think of sort of theology there's a common phrase, I don't necessarily know if it's 100% accurate, but it's oftentimes, but a simplistic idea that philosophy is the handmaid of theology, that it mm-hmm. assists the understanding of theology. And it's certainly true that it does, because of the fact that that it's, theology is sort of like the supernaturally applied aspect of philosophy. It combines revelation, combines study of the entity of the church and the faith and things like that to philosophy. But philosophy is merely natural aspect. So you get the grasp on that, because therein lies most of your principles to be able to study the higher ed, higher things more easily and to understand them to a greater facility.
Well, it's really interesting, Father. And I think that's a great example of how important philosophy is, right? I mean, that's really, I think that's a beautiful thing to know as we begin this series, to see how important to be able to make these distinctions. And as you say, you're learning this philosophy, you're learning the love of wisdom, you're learning how to think and reason before even learning about, you know, the theology and kind of your your primary studies of being a priest, but in order to learn the primary studies of theology, you first learn philosophy. That's a really important thing to know, I think.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the thing about it too is, like, again, if we want to, you know, to be able to put these things in more simple ideas, a lot of times use examples or analogies, right? And a perfect example of that is that some of the things that we study in theology, we aren't able to use philosophy to obtain that knowledge of. Now, a perfect example would be the Holy Trinity. You know, I can use natural reason alone to come to the conclusion that there is one God. I can, without any aid of grace or revelation, I can come to that conclusion, and many have. And in fact, we'll see that in just a moment here, that most had originally. I cannot use reason to come to the conclusion that God is three persons in one God. That's a mystery of our faith. That is something that is only made known through revelation to us. But what I can see when I get to that point where I'm studying, what is the Trinity? How am I supposed to understand the Trinity? That when I come to something that is a mystery of our faith, I can see that while I cannot reason to this and I cannot fully grasp it in its entirety, at the same time, what I'm learning now in theology does not contradict reason. And so but if I don't have the good use of reason, I can't realize it doesn't contradict reason until I have that foundation to build
upon. Right. Interesting.
So so with that, we come to, you know, really kind of having this understanding of what it is. Philosophy, so it's just the study of man's love or desire to seek after wisdom and to grow in wisdom. It brings up a good point, which comes to serving what the purpose of the show is, which is, why is it today when we look around in society, generally speaking, people do not are not interested in philosophy? It's not something regularly taught. And we let off the show a little bit by saying, you know, it's simpler to indoctrinate, and it's simpler to, you know, encrust a message into somebody's mind or something like that, which is true. But there's a greater reason to why that happens, why society allows it to happen, and why we do not see so many people independently going on their quest to gain in wisdom. And that is directly tied with our faith, actually, because it is the effect of original sin on mankind. So we have this understanding of the soul, right? So man is a composite being, body and soul. We know that they're joined together, united as one. What is the thing? I'll give you a quiz question, Kevin. What is the thing that separates man? What is the demonstrable thing that separates man from beast that we can see? The thing that lets us know that we have an immortal soul, a soul that is completely different than all the rest of the beasts around.
I guess I'd say the intellect or the will, right? The will to choose.
The will is correct. So the fact that we have free will, or i.e. what we will call it, we'll say here, which is perhaps a bit more pertinent, is the ability, the use of reason. You know, that's what separates us. When you look at all the animals, animals operate in many ways similar to man. That, you know, if you look at your, if you have a dog, you know, the dog does a lot of things that we do, but because it contains an aspect of its soul, that's its animalistic soul, that is similar to ours, that, you know, motor function and action and even feelings and pain and pleasure and and appetites. It has desires for food, desires for sleep, etc., but all natural desires, but they share them with us. What we have different is that we're able to reason, and no other animal has that. Perfect example for it is that man can choose to fast if he wants to, meaning that he can be hungry and have a natural appetite for food. And if food is placed in front of him, he can choose to not eat that food because he has the ability to of free will and choice and the use of rationality to choose something for a higher end rather than a lower end. The dog does not have that ability. If he is hungry and you place food in front of him, he will eat that food. Now, you can train a dog, meaning that he is more afraid of some sort of punishment to come, or knowledge, it has a remembrance of a greater reward if he, you know, if you get him to stay and not go after the treat right away, that he knows that better treats and you know, pats and praise come along his way. You can train a dog, but the dog doesn't make that choice on his own. If you don't give him the prompt to stay, if you don't, you know, train him in that way, he's hungry and you put a treat down the hallway, he's going after that treat. If not acted upon in some other way. Man does not have that need because he has reason. He can choose to do one thing over another. And that use of reason is really that part of that image, and that is that image and likeness of God in man, that he is the higher quality of our immortal soul being operated. And that's where we see it made manifest in the world. Because of that, we have this combination of rationality and animalistic tendencies. And so the reason why I say that man today, largely speaking, doesn't seek after this gain of wisdom, this study and striving after this increase, the knowledge and the science of philosophy, for instance, is because of the effects of fallen human nature. So, and in such, the further away from the garden we've gotten, the more inclined we are to give into our natural tendencies, our base passions. And when we do not exercise and regularly utilize reason over natural tendencies, this is why, as Lent's coming up, the idea of fasting and abstinence and penance and things like that are so important to the betterment of the Christian, because it strengthens our soul. It strengthens our willpower to resist temptation. And if I can resist the things, if I can turn away from things that are of themselves good, then when something that I know comes along that is evil and tempts me, I have a stronger inclination to turn away from it. And so it's the same idea, because we are so the further away we man as a men as society and just population in general, and the more it affects us, the further away we get away from that, the less inclined we are to do the hard thing and to search after wisdom and to try to increase in wisdom. Really does take is a constant use of our rationality, and it is a rising up higher than what our natural base passions and inclinations are, which is easier for us to follow. So it's easier for man to seek pleasure. It's easier to just go after the base desires, the food, the sleep, the you know, whatever, the reward. It's, you know, we go to work because we get paid, not because there's some sort of higher end necessarily being followed in that. You know, and as soon as work's out, we are, you know, what's the common man doing? Vegging out on the couch, watching television, you know, eating Cheetos, you know, et cetera. And that's that simplicity, that sort of hedonistic aspect of existence, that has become more and more prevalent in society. And so less and less does man search for the higher plane. And the less they use rationality, the more easily it is to distract them from what really is going on in the world. You know, that is why last night was the perfect example. Well, they estimate probably like 150 million people tuned into the Super Bowl last night.
Wow.
You know, how many of those people went to church that day? How many of those people, you know, took time to pray a rosary or listen to this additional sermon or listen to something from traditional, from Catholic Family Podcast, or read something, you know, to grow. It's not to say that you can't watch something as entertainment, but if that is like your whole, I mean, most people planned out their entire day to be that. They, you know, it was making food, it was doing, you know, setting up things to have a big old party and everybody come over and then to sit and watch flashing lights all day long and pregame, postgame, everything. Not once did they strive for something higher in themselves.
Well, when I think too, sorry, Father, I think it's really interesting because I think you see too the hedonistic, the more hedonistic, the less happy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting that, you know, they become more worldly and more animalistic and less happy. And so that their instinct then is to become more and more hedonistic and more animalistic rather than saying, okay, wait, what, I'm doing something wrong, something in my life is wrong. And instead of seeing that, okay, we need to go to God and we need to seek wisdom and truth, they sit more on the couch and eat more Cheetos, I think. And I've done it. So it's not like I'm the perfect example over here, but I think it is, it's interesting. And so Father, do you think, is that especially an issue of our time, or has that been an issue since the beginning of man?
Again, I think if you think of it from fall to now, and you have aspects where, you know, there were shifts because of greater influences in society, you know, when the faith, you know, you had man move away from God and rationality till you got to the flood. Then the flood comes and then, you know, things got a lot more clear again, you know, and, you know, the same thing would be said to like, you know, the Jews wandering in the desert in Egypt and then finding the promised land. You know, they probably would have been more inclined to be, you know, to be searching after things of God once they reached the promised land than they were when they were just, you know, hanging out in Egypt, or before what led up to them being able to be captured in Egypt. You know, so there, and then when we see it in the church too, you know, when I'm sure that things in society probably became pretty hedonistic and base, and then all of a sudden the plagues came to Europe, and you know, as high as a third of the population dies off in a right. relatively short period of time. Guess what? You know, when there's nothing else, people start realizing they need to turn back to God again. You know, the Protestant Reformation culminates in the Council of Trent and this reforming of the church and everything like that. The unintended reformation on the Protestants' part, theirs was a corrupted idea of reformation. But the fact that the Protestant Reformation happened was because there was so much, there are so many rampant problems in society and the church as a whole that it allowed it to take place. And then Trent comes around and fixes a lot of those problems, and you start to have this resurgence. So it's always ebbed and flowed, but if you look at it as a general whole timeline from Adam and Eve to now, I would say there's probably a steady decline in man's interest in having the higher versus the lower functions becoming more hedonistic. And certainly of our modern times, that has absolutely been true. And it's all culminated now in, I mean, just how easily man forgets about, you know, horrible abuses that have come his way. I mean, 2020 and onward is the perfect example. It's like taking what usually happens in decades worth of time and shrinking it down into this tiny little microcosm as to why it's effective in society today, because we're so far gone. To see that, you know, we literally had an entire world shut down business and operation and, you know, kill small companies and lock you in your home and change your entire way of life by force, stripping you of basic human rights. And then guess what? We, as a society, we ignore huge amounts of those abuses remaining because the sport's back again. So easily distracted. And then you heard everybody say, oh, we're back, thank goodness we're back to normal. What about today is normal in comparison to 5 years ago? It's not. And so it's, we suppress that so much that it takes very little to bring us back to those hedonistic, simple based desires. And that's that. I had a friend of mine who worked overseas as a military contractor in Afghanistan, and he talked about some of the people there, because people oftentimes think of Islam as, you know, there's two polarizing opposite ideas of, you know, what, you know, Islam and the people of the Middle East and things like that. There's like this Americanistic idea that is false, that they're all terrorists and we should bomb them all and wipe them off the face of the planet, and, you know, that's foolish. And then there's this liberal idea that, you know, they're all just wonderful and these are just a few radical extremists, and that's foolish too. But in the Middle East, where Islam actually is, and the operation in various cultures of Muslims and some of their gross violations of basic natural laws in their society that never gets reported by either of those two sides, and how much in their societies, by allowing this sort of like Sharia reign and everything that's taking place, they've completely moved away from absolute truth and suppressed reason. That he was explaining to me that there would be people hit by cars almost every day in the city because they would be walking and they go, oh, I have to get across the street. And like a deer, they just turn and go across the street without looking. And he said it was remarkable to see, or people would load up the top of a bus after the inside was full, and people would fall off the bus on a regular basis. And it was like this basic aspect of self-preservation was so diminished, which is part of higher thinking, because they had, you know, they had so far moved away from not even following natural law. And, you know, and look at us now. I mean, we've moved so far away from obeying the things of natural law, I mean, the Ten Commandments, the things ingrained on man's heart from the beginning, that we can't even like tell what a boy or a girl is anymore. And, you know, we're in the same boat. You know, we've also suppressed self-preservation to an extent that is obscene. You know, that, I mean, think about it now. How many times you see school shootings or suicides or murder suicides and things like that. You know, it's one thing it's natural to be angry and even angry enough to take somebody's life. It is completely contrary to nature to just be like, you know, I'm just going to end my life. You know, it takes a serious level of depression and desperation to get oneself into that position. It's why most people are afraid of heights, because naturally we don't want to fall from the ladder, you know. And but when we've suppressed this higher aspect to it, then as soon as something gets hard, then every time things get difficult, people just look for instantaneous relief, instantaneous solution, whether it's good or bad, and instant gratification. And if that means, well, if I can't find that in like the 20 seconds I look around my desk to figure out if there's a magic pill for this, it's why, you know, three quarters of society took an untested, unproven new scientific genetic experiments in, you know, as a solution to a non-pandemic pandemic, was because, well, the problem's here. If we just take this thing, it'll go away. And that was the narrative painted to them. And so they did. And it's the same thing. If we can't find the solution sitting right around us immediately, then, well, maybe it's just not, maybe I just shouldn't even be here anymore. That'll take away the pain. And that's why it's become so prevalent now, is that it's no longer left to those either psychologically damaged or people who are truly at the end of the rope of true desperation. It's just become sort of like the, you know, new solution of a lot of problems in life. And it has to do with this idea of the suppression of rationality, I think, as we move away. But on the inverse, getting back to topic, that's why you don't see people striving after better application of their own reasoning abilities, because it's like training for something. It's hard to do. You have to take the time to read and study and to think and reflect upon it and decipher and make distinctions and make your way through that courseway. That's where the difficulty comes in. And at a certain point, people are like, well, the words are just too big. I don't want to do this. And so philosophy goes by the wayside. It's why most of us don't speak multiple languages, because, you know, it used to be, what was the sign of education? In the early days, so it was, you know, earlier on, a few hundred years ago, if you were educated, you were able to speak Latin, like in conversation, you know, and it was regular for people to also obtain knowledge of French, you know, and Spanish and things like that. I mean, it's still where you are in Europe, obviously it's more prevalent, so that people still know other languages because of the fact that their neighbors speak a different language. But, you know, for the population as a whole, this knowledge of other languages that aren't necessarily applicable just because, well, if I go drive an hour away, I walk into somebody speaking this language, but rather, you know, hey, it'd be good for me to know for greater facility in learning to learn other languages. Why? I remember Bishop Sanborn saying to me one time years ago, he said that any dummy can learn a language. It's all about discipline. You know, it's language learning isn't super difficult. It just is tedious, boring, and takes a long time. And if you can be disciplined enough, you could, and spend enough time studying it, you can learn it. But most people don't have the discipline to sit down to actually go through the flashcards or take the time to start, you know, pulling apart grammatical structures and things like that. And that's why they don't learn them. So.
Well, I guess that's part of again the reason for this entire series is to express again the issues with modern philosophy and how it has affected the world, but also to get people interested in learning again, right? Go and you know, try to learn how to better reason and learn the basics of logic.
Okay. I think that's the thing about it. It's, you know, that's why I feel the etymology is so necessary. Because that understanding of philosophy at its very base level, being a love of wisdom, means that it applies across so much in the area of improving self-improvement in the way of it's seeking things of truth. It's seeking better understanding of the natural world around us and all of that. And so you can apply that to science, mathematics, you could apply it to language, you can apply it to culture, cooking, everything. Putting yourself out beyond to understand something that you didn't understand before, to have a better grasp of what something is, and then being able to apply it to your daily life. That's it, all sort of connects back to philosophy. And I'll use that as a springboard to sort of get back on track here as we go. That lack of desire to do so and to overcome our passions, it comes from that. And really, there's a good, when we get to scholasticism, you know, like at the end of this, there's a good distinction that the church's form of philosophy, scholasticism, makes for this. It's like actu primo and an actu secundo. The primo is the capability, and the secundo is the putting into action. We all have the capability to increase, but few actually do so. A baby has the ability to walk, but it's only when he actually starts taking steps that he's taken the actus secundo, that he's taken that second action and begun to put it into practice and walk. But from there, there's a myriad of great increase that he can go. He can go from walking to running to jumping to playing hopscotch to ice skating, and ultimately to becoming, you know, an Olympic sprinter. If he, you know, the potentiality to grow and increase in that, there is no real ceiling. There's no limit to it. You can get better at whatever you're doing always. And the same with philosophy, that understanding of the world around us, understanding that wisdom that we love and we seek after. There's no ceiling to it. There's only increase. And so it's a lifelong endeavor if we really have that love and that desire to increase in that way. And ultimately, like I said, it does connect back to God.